Okay, well, this is the Sunstone Symposium panel, officially titled, I can't remember what it was officially titled, but it is about natural childbirth and the intersections between LDS philosophy and theology and our personal approach and passion for the work, and hopefully some questions directed from our audience. So they asked me first to remind everyone to turn off your cell phones or any kind of beeping devices. Okay. Well, I think what we're going to do first is introduce ourselves one by one so you can get an idea of who we are and why we're here and attracted to this, to natural childbirth and feel so passionately about it. And after that, several of the panelists will do sort of a condensed summary of some of their personal points of interest. And then we'll just open the discussion to either questions from the audience or discussions between ourselves of contradictions or correlating experiences. Okay, let's see.
I'm going to sit up here because this microphone won't reach. So.
Okay, sure. All right, well, I'll introduce myself first, I guess. My name is Kimberly Mellon, and I organized this panel because it's a subject I'm very personally passionate about and interested in. As far as my involvement with the birth community, I have three children. We took the Bradley classes as a couple with the birth of our first child, and our first and third children were born naturally, and by, I guess, natural, I'll use the definition that the Bradley method uses, which is an unmedicated, intervention-free birth. And our second child did have a lot of intervention. And so it was after I compared the birth of my first and second child and realized what most of the women were talking about when they talked about their childbirth experience, and especially the recovery period and the differences between the infants responding and the bonding effect, that's when I became passionate about better educating myself and becoming a Bradley teacher so I could extend that information to other women that might be interested. And then since then, I've also done a lot of doulaing for my students involved in that class. So I'll pass this down to Becky.
All right, well, I'm Rebecca McInnes. I am a certified nurse midwife. I practice out of hospital in a freestanding birth center in Holiday, so it's real close to here, in a licensed facility. It is a licensed facility by the state. As a certified nurse midwife, I'm a licensed medical professional. Although the vast majority of certified nurse midwives practice in hospital, I chose to practice out of hospital in order to provide a type of childbirth experience that many women find difficult to come by in a hospital environment. Not that the hospital environment is not very appropriate for many women, but that an alternate environment can be safe and a nice option for women for whom they are carefully screened and have that opportunity. Provides a totally different experience, as Kim was talking about, not only the way baby responds, but the way mother feels and empowerment issues. We have two different nurse midwives that practice there. I've actually been practicing midwifery for 20 years now, and over 20 years now, and have practiced in hospital, out of hospital, birthing center, and home births, and have five children of my own, seven grandchildren, so I've been in this for a long time. Feel like I have some experiences and some beliefs that I've gained from some people that, many of the people that I've dealt with that I'd like to be able to share. And so that's why I accepted this panel opportunity. And I hope, although we've got a really small group that are listening, that you can really participate and help us with some questions and ideas, and that we can make this into kind of a lively experience for us. I'd like that.
My name is Adriana Costello-Martin. I work with Becky at the Birth Center. I'm studying to be a certified nurse midwife myself. I've been teaching the Bradley Method Natural Childbirth classes for 13 years. I'm pregnant with my fourth baby. I'm planning my second home birth. My first two babies were born in hospitals, but were both unmedicated. And I came to natural childbirth after the birth of my first baby, and finding out how much of an upstream swimmer I was, just even contemplating the idea of going unmedicated. I had a great experience with my first birth, and from what everyone was telling me, it was going to be a nightmare, and I would be begging for the epidural in the parking lot, and that was not my experience. And that's when the light went on for me, and I certified as a teacher and have been a doula. Does everyone know what a doula is? Most people. A woman who is with a woman and a couple during labor for moral and physical support. There's more I could say. We could go on and on. I'm happy to be on the panel. I guess my LDS background, I was raised in Orem. I'm the oldest of seven. I left the church about 10 years ago, and if any of you in the audience have done that, you know it's it wasn't natural childbirth that made me leave, but lots of factors. Although there, I did find kind of a dissonance between natural childbirth and certain aspects of church doctrine. Anyway, and so even though I no longer ascribe to some of those beliefs, my LDS heritage, my tribe, has informed my reverence for life and my passion for this. And I'm here also to maybe gain some understanding about why LDS women are so, especially in Utah, so against even considering the option of natural childbirth.
My name is Alicia Cole, and I have been teaching the Bradley Method for about a year now. I just certified last year as a teacher. I have three children. My first son was born by the Bradley Method in Georgia, and he was born in the hospital with a certified nurse midwife, and it was a good experience up until they took him to the nursery, and things went downhill from there. With my second pregnancy, I actually found I was pregnant with twins and had a C-section to deliver them because they were both breech. Does everyone know what breech means? It means they were bum down instead of head down, and so they didn't feel it was safe to deliver them. I'm currently pregnant with my fourth baby, and I am planning a home birth with a certified nurse midwife. And I'm really excited for it. It's been hard because a lot of people who hear about my circumstances are worried, because when you have a vaginal birth after a cesarean, it carries certain risks. However, after doing personal research, I found that it seems to be a safer option for me to be at home than to risk the interventions of a hospital setting with a traditional obstetrician. So I'm also LDS. I was raised in the church. I grew up in California, which I think helped to give me a little bit more expansive idea of how to question my surroundings and things of that nature. I was raised very strong LDS. I still am. And it really does baffle me when I hear so many people against natural childbirth, because I feel that it is such an empowering experience, and that I would feel that the Lord would want every woman to get to feel this who possibly could. I have lots of friends who are scared of the idea, and hopefully we can shed some light on why that might be. So.
Yeah, why don't we switch to that microphone?
Yeah, switch. This doesn't even, can you guys hear me? I can kind of lean this way. My name is Rachel Lovett. I am a labor and delivery nurse. I kind of trade off at different hospitals in Utah Valley, so I kind of get a different experience at the different hospitals also, because they definitely do things differently where you're at and depending on where you're at. But my passion for childbirth came when I had my first two children. I have five. My first two were born in Tucson, Arizona. Did absolutely no research, took no classes, none of that. But I was recommended to a birth center that was run by nurse midwives and had obstetricians also that at least did prenatal stuff there, but they delivered at the hospital that was close by. So I ended up delivering at this birth center that was in Tucson, Arizona. Never knew that women did it different. I thought, I loved it. Loved the experience, painful, difficult, hard, joyful, wonderful experience. It was one of those things that has truly stretched me in my life. And anyways, because of this, I have no clue that people did things different anywhere else. So I came here to Utah, moved to Utah, and it was actually kind of, it was a culture shock for me here in terms of birthing, because I had my last three children here. Struggled to find some place where I felt like it was back in Tucson. I birthed at three different hospitals here. Two of them I used nurse midwives. I'd already had kids. I knew what I wanted. I knew how to tell them what I wanted. So I kind of lucked out in that area. But still didn't feel like I had the same experience. Still good. Love the people I worked with. They weren't horrible. I had good experiences. Still natural. Completely medication-free. Didn't have any complications. So it was still a good experience, but it was still different, just the whole philosophy behind it all. I think I'm similar to, what's your name again? Alicia. In the terms that my passion is that I want women to have what I've had, quite honestly. In the hospital, I see many, many different kinds of birthing experiences. Some natural, some not natural, different choices being made to put things kind of being forced on women. But really, I don't see it as much. I don't see the women having what I had with my first two experiences. So that's where I come from. It's important to me that women can experience that, can have that as part of their lives.
Okay, good. My name is Vance Mellon. I'm a husband to Kim Mellon, and I've sort of, the last 10 years or so, really learned a lot more about, particularly the Bradley Method, which Kim became certified in. I think when I started out, I was pretty scared of natural childbirth. In some ways, I still am, so maybe I'm a good counterpoint to a little bit. I don't know, I had a great experience with our third child. The first child that we did natural childbirth with, little Ellie, Kim's labor was so long that it was kind of terrifying for me as a dad. And I think part of the drawback to a Bradley Method, for example, is that it takes a lot of work for the husband. So if you're a lazy husband and you don't, and you've been working all week, or you have to go back to work, or so, I just remember it was so exhausting. Because I was doing I kind of grew up in a family that likes massage a lot, so I was doing a lot of pressure pointing on Kim's back, and I remember I stood in the shower with her for like 2 hours while she ran the water on her back, and I would just lean my head out of the curtain and just try to breathe showery air. It was so hot, it was just exhausting, but it was kind of thrilling, and it was a very spiritual experience that first birth. I remember at one point, I just kind of broke down bawling after it was all over. And in some ways, people are going to hate me for saying this, but in some ways, it's almost more difficult on the husband. Not really, but kind of, because she can't remember anything, hardly. She can't remember how much she struggled and the pain and how she'd look at me with this glazed look, as she was transitioning, as they call it, as they're about ready to deliver the baby. And that kind of look that she had, just bleeding and I would consult with the midwives and say, well, maybe we can give her something just to take the edge off. And the midwife was really brave and said, you have a plan. She wanted to stick to the plan. And I remember admiring her courage despite all the hours. How long was that first labor?
It was 38 hours of posterior hours, back layer birth.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great hospital that would even allow that, because we went to several hospitals too, and I had some terrible experiences at other hospitals that I won't mention so I don't get sued. But second birth was totally medicated, epidural and everything, because that first one was so hard, we were worried it was going to be back labor, and I kind of talked her into that. Third was just as easy as can be. Hopefully we'll have a chance to talk more about those. The second kid that was the most medicated is the wildest kid in our family. She's totally out of control. I love her. I'm crazy about her. But in some ways, for a couple of years, she was just a nightmare kid. So I blame it all on the intervention. Something to do with the forceps or something. But anyway, I'm here more to give maybe a dad's perspective on one dad's perspective on some of these issues too. So hopefully I can contribute.
Okay, and then I had a few talking points that I emailed to all of our panelists beforehand, and so some people would like to sort of express their thoughts in a linear fashion going straight through, so I'm going to turn time over to each of the panelists, and if you are interested in doing that, feel free. We'll start with Becky.
Hey, can I interrupt for a second?
Sure.
Before you guys go on, can you just briefly say what the Bradley Method is?
Sure. The Bradley Method is the, I guess, abbreviated commonplace name for the American Academy of Husband and Coach Childbirth. It was begun by Dr. Bradley in the 50s. Is that correct? 50s. I'm getting all my dates confused, yes. And right now, the two people in charge of certifying teachers and perpetuating the method of instruction, their names are Jay and Margie Hathaway. So if you've had a Bradley birth and you're interested in teaching, there's a series of classes that you take and multitudes of books that you read and outline, and you have to attend other teachers' classes and participate in a doula at several births before you're certified. So, and it's heavily reliant, as my husband said, on your birth partner's involvement, whether it's your husband or sister or mother or whatever, but they do take a huge burden, not only for the actual delivery, but for the mind-body exercises and relaxation and massage techniques that you practice for about 3 months leading up to the birth. Mm-hmm. So ideally, Dr. Bradley says the husband should be exhausted and the wife should feel exuberant and empowered because they do a huge amount. And as Vance said, after our first birth, he took 2 weeks off of work and his back was out. And I had a meal and a nap, and I walked to Chicago 5 miles the next day there and back in the middle of January. I felt like Superwoman, and he was wasted. He had about half a head of gray hair just from that experience. But I felt great, and that's what's important.
The thing that impressed me about the Bradley approach is also that I guess Dr. Bradley worked with on a farm as a kid and saw that animals, they approach birth naturally. I mean, they have a certain kind of biorhythms, I guess, that they go through as they approach delivery. And by being aware of those, you can have patience with your wife and patience to avoid the medication and kind of help her through the process based on just a more natural, almost animalistic approach to having a child.
Also, a key part of it is just educating yourself as far as the chemicals and pharmaceuticals used in the birth process and understanding why and how those were invented and how they were used and what the statistical evidence are that when, once you introduce a specific chemical into your body, statistically, how many women will lead to the next intervention and the next intervention and the next intervention, ultimately sometimes leading up to a C-section. And often women don't know that when they embark on a system of medication that everybody at the hospital is aware of the statistical ramifications, but the mother isn't. So a lot of it is pharmaceutical and even obstetrical self-education so that you understand there is no normal. Your body is normal, and you don't know as a first-time mother what your normal will be. So it's educating yourself, holistic approaches to try before you try the medicated approach.
And I know we've got kind of a little bit of an unbalanced panel here in that there are so many people working with the Bradley Method. There are several methods of childbirth education. Hypnosis is fairly new, using hypnobirthing or hypnobabies programs where they use self-hypnosis to have women to be able to relax more into the process, to be able to trust their bodies and work with their bodies in doing the process. Bradley also teaches relaxation. A lot of these teach visualization, those kinds of techniques. Lamaze was one of the more original programs that used distraction techniques, breathing and relaxation, and then Grantley, Dr. Dick Reed. Grantley Dick Reed was one of the original natural childbirth founders, which talked about relaxation and trusting your body to work on its own, that women could do this. But there are several different methods of childbirth education specifically to know what it is that the body naturally does, what different variations can occur, what types of assistance that there is out there, medication and interventions that could occur, what those ramifications are, what the benefits are, to really just educate people about what happens in childbirth, because it is not something that we see. It is out of our sight in a hospital. I tell my clients, you know, we believe in our society that, childbirth is an emergency waiting to occur and we need to be saved from it. And that is the general attitude. And so if you've never seen it, how do you know what to expect? I used to ask my clients back before I was a midwife 25 years ago, you know, what would they do if their birth was long, if their labor was long? And they would come up with these different ideas, and I say, and what is long? And I would invariably have somebody in the group that would say, oh, 3-4 hours. Wow, we've got some education to do, because they don't know and they haven't seen it. You go turn on the TV and you got a 30-minute spot, and the person, you know, goes, oh, and she has a baby, and they're already, you know, recovering after 30 minutes, and including commercial interruptions. So, you know, it doesn't seem like it's something that would take hours and hours to accomplish. When I prepared for this, because we're talking about why is it that and I am LDS and have been LDS since I was 17 years old. Very strong LDS, converted to the church, so I wasn't raised and don't have an LDS heritage. But I wondered why, knowing that LDS heritage is midwifery and natural childbirth, they didn't have the choices back then. Midwifery used to be a calling in the LDS church. They would send women back east to get midwifery training to be able to give this kind of care. And it was a wonderful thing for the women. So I've really thought about this. I've spoken, and of course I've been discussing things with clients for 20 years since being a midwife, but I've spoken with people recently too saying, you know, why do you think this is, other midwives? And going back to the thoughts of my clients, and I did come up with a kind of a little presentation that I would like to give to you on my thoughts as to why LDS women say, not me, you know, I'm not gonna do that. And so I'd like to present it to you, and I'm sure it will stimulate some thought, hopefully not any anger, and I'm sure there will be some alternate views, but I'd like to kind of share my thoughts on this anyway. I believe that part of our belief system comes from our United States belief system as a whole, back to our origination as a Puritan society. I believe that there are still some beliefs, some Puritan beliefs, that being female is to suffer. That, you know, that this is a necessity that we have because, you know, we have to make payment for the crimes that Eve committed in taking the forbidden fruit. And I believe that that still exists in our society, pretty prevalent. I believe that it's accentuated in LDS society, where culture dictates women's roles, that women follow their spouse or the patriarchal order, that they do as they're told, that they stay at home and they have children, be fruitful and multiply, that instead of being a companion and an helpmate to their spouse, that instead decision making is deferred to the spouse, that women take this advice to follow the prophet to an extreme and have ignored our admonition to gain our own testimony and not to live on borrowed light. That women in LDS culture often do exactly that. They live on borrowed light. They look outside themselves for answers. They look to receive joy through their spouse's activities. They look to receive happiness in the same way. They look to receive fulfillment through their spouse's achievements. And when they're not fulfilled, they feel like it's somehow something wrong with them. something inherently wrong with them. Or being a woman, there's something, you know, this is just a burden that we carry as being a woman. Because being a woman, as I said before, is to suffer. And childbirth symbolizes women's suffering. It is the epitome of women's suffering. I believe that many women, LDS women, believe that the easing of childbirth suffering is a gift of a loving patriarchal order. That our childbirth suffering is kindly eased by these loving people that care for us. I have no doubt that this is the medical view, that they believe that they are easing women's suffering, and this is a gift that they give. And I believe that women believe that they suffer so much that they deserve some kind of relief and some kind of semblance of control. They may not be able to choose if they have a child, and many LDS women I care for don't feel they have that choice. Well, you know, I don't. There are some that don't really believe they should do birth control. If they do, they feel guilty about it. Or, you know, we did, but, you know, we couldn't really do this. Or, you know, my husband really wants this. It's like, okay, they don't have that choice, but darn it, I can choose when, and I can choose to do it the easy way, or so they suppose that it's the easy way. Because they hold it very firm, that it is okay not to suffer in childbirth. As a matter of fact, as everyone here on the panel can attest to, I'm sure, discussions of natural childbirth are often met with anger, that they don't want to feel like they are less of a woman because they chose the easy way. I've actually heard women say, actually many times, that being at the hospital is my break from home. And you know what? That's a really pitiful vacation. We should be able to do better than that. As a matter of fact, in our society, if someone says, I'd like to get in an accident so that I can have a vacation in the hospital, we'd think that was, you know, we'd think that that was a mental, you know, disturbance. We'd be concerned about them. And yet, this is really common in LDS women. I want a break. Geez, we've got to be able to get better breaks than going to the hospital. What's more is if you break your leg and go to the hospital, you don't have to take care of it for 18 years.
The food's not that good either.
This is true. Medical culture, I believe, also definitely contributes to women looking outside of themselves for answers because it is very controlling. Our medical culture is very controlling. Almost like a parent to a child, it's okay, honey, we'll take care of you. And I know that most people have heard that. It's easy then for LDS women, indeed any spiritual Christian women, to conform and obey. In contrast, as an LDS woman, I believe that many natural childbirth advocates believe that a woman's body is a gift of a loving Heavenly Father, that a woman is indeed powerful, and that childbirth is the ultimate example of that strength. And I believe LDS women are afraid of that strength. I believe they're afraid of their own power, and they shy away from empowerment because I believe they are afraid of losing their eternity, that they will become a carnal woman seeking after their own fulfillment and make huge mistakes because they certainly can't trust their own spirit to guide them the right direction. That indeed they'll lose all the parts of themselves they believe are good and kind and loving by finding their own power, that they'll lose that. I believe that most LDS women, those that I have cared for, know that their core LDS beliefs are good. They felt that warm, swelling, you know, confirmation, like a warm ember, a spark in their breast, and it warms their soul. But instead of nourishing it, instead of fanning it into a flame, they close their heart tightly around it so they don't lose it, and eventually it will die. To embrace natural childbirth is to embrace femininity. To recognize that womanhood is a gift from a loving Heavenly Father and that women are strong and powerful. I believe that natural childbirth strengthens a woman's spirit and leads her to her Heavenly Father.
Thank you.
are not quite as organized as Becky's. And my journey is definitely very different, having been raised in the church and subsequently leaving it. Part of my journey, I had a fabulous birth in 1994 in a hospital with an OB. And the more I read, the more I discovered that what the mainstream had told me about childbirth was indeed not true. That what was good for me was not what was being practiced in the hospitals. And the more I read, this buzzword that's been around for about 10 years, evidence-based medicine, was not being practiced, especially in obstetrics. Almost all of the things routinely done to women in childbirth today are non-evidence-based. Breaking water, starting Pitocin, inducing early, elective induction, elective C-section, we could go on and on. It's not evidence-based. And my childbirth experience was so empowering. And as an active LDS woman at the time, I'm not sure quite what led me to even seek that out. I was at the births of two of my siblings when I was 10 and 12 years old. And my mom, from my birth, where I was pulled out by forceps in Southern California, to seeking out community midwives at the community hospital in Orem, Utah, and then inviting her older children to be part of that birth, must have planted that seed. I wanted to be an OB, and I didn't know. Even though my mom was seeing midwives, I want to be an OB. I didn't know that much about midwives. And just being so empowered by my first birth experience, I wanted to share the news. And I just got shut down at every turn and how crazy I was. And why wouldn't, you know, what people would say, well, you wouldn't have natural dentistry. Okay, so dentistry, if you have problems there, it means there's a disease process. And pregnancy is not a disease. And just so, such this dissonance of thought and idea and approach to even think that childbirth was some kind of a disease that you needed to be delivered of and cured. And my mind is going all over the place, but I want you to notice how Becky called the people she works with her clients. They are not her patients, because most of them are not sick. And language is very powerful, and that is expressed in like some of the hypno classes that are around today, their use of language. And we don't call the people we work with patients, because pregnancy is usually a very healthy time in a woman's life. I still don't understand fully maybe what led me to start questioning. It's almost like that empowering experience of childbirth gave me permission to look at other parts of my life. That I had never questioned, that I had always taken for granted. And growing up in Utah, I think there is a narrower view of, there's a different Mormonism here in Utah. And I find it interesting that the women on either side of me are not from Utah. And I sometimes wonder, had I been raised outside the state, if I could have remained within the church. But I do find that it still informs a great deal of who I am. And just like for your own information, Utah has the highest epidural rate in the world. On the planet, we have a 95 to 98% epidural rate. Wow. In our state. The rest of the U.S. is about, go ahead.
Do you want the C-section
right?
I do.
Yeah, I do too. It's about 20.
22.2.
Yeah.
And it's actually the lowest in the U.S.
Which is interesting, considering the high epidural.
Very contrasting.
Actually,
statistic.
I have a comment about that. It's been.
Can you give her the microphone?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
What about Utah Valley?
I don't have state those specifics. State. Yeah, each hospital will have their individual. We also have one of the highest induction rates, being over 80%. However. In most education programs, they teach midwives that epidurals lead to cesareans, therefore a high epidural rate will necessitate a high cesarean rate. However, that is not the truth here, which tells me that it does not lead to cesareans.
I believe the reason why our cesarean rate is lower is very clear. Women don't want two babies. And if they're told, sorry, you're done, they're going to be angry and tell their friends, don't go to that doc again. He won't do it. The fact is, multiple cesareans are a great risk. The more cuts into your body, the more likely to have difficulty in future pregnancies. It does increase the risk. And so why would you increase your risk if you could, if we could say, gee, let's just give you an epidural, let you sleep, we'll wait longer, so it takes 18 hours, but you can have six children instead of two. And that's what they're going for here. The women want more children. They're going to be more patient. And that's what I believe is the reason why our cesarean section rate is lower, because women want it, and they drive what's given.
No, Pitocin rates are not.
Repeat her question so that they can hear.
You're asking what the Pitocin rates...
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I'm just wondering if Pitocin rates are lower than that, because
no.
You can be more patient if you haven't been given Pitocin.
It's not lower. Pitocin is like candy here.
Okay.
And yeah, it's doled out at almost every birth.
Okay.
Yeah. And just so you know, the World Health Organization recommends a C-section rate between 10 and 15%. Utah's at 22%, the nation's at 33%. The Netherlands has a 7% C-section rate, and they lose fewer babies and fewer moms, and they have a third of their babies at home. So there are big problems in the American maternity care system. But as regarding, it just seems kind of, there are some really unique aspects with the LDS culture and the use of drugs. And I think it goes back to some of the patriarchy, the male-run society that women are raised in. And epidural and the use of technology and the use of drugs is institutionally sanctioned. It's allowed. You get to go to the hospital and use these drugs, and it's okay because your OB said so, and your OB might be your bishop too. There's like this institutional nod of the head that it's okay. And I don't have stats, but you know, you hear how Utah also has a high rate of prescription drug abuse and Ritalin use, and you know, there are some other kind of issues that go along with that culture. There, interestingly, also there's a very strong underground subculture of very LDS women who are very pro-natural childbirth, home birth, mm-hmm. etc. So there's this real dichotomy that I wish I could explain. So if anybody knows how that works, that would be great. But in my years of teaching, I find that the LDS couples coming to me to hear what I have to say are a little bit more open-minded, whether they've been raised in Utah or not. They are, I guess I would call them, more thinking Mormons. And I wouldn't say that anywhere but Sunstone. But that's kind of what my experience has been. I will.
Just time awareness, we have 45 minutes left, so we need to sort of truncate.
Well, and so to kind of elaborate on my background, like I said, I was raised in Northern California. My mom had five children. Every single one of us was a natural birth, other than my second to the oldest. She had an on-call physician deliver her and had interventions, and he is the only one out of us who has had problems with really anything in his life. It seems to ironic, like I don't want to blame the interventions, but it seems ironic that he's the only one of us out of five who has depression issues, who has seen counselors and whatnot. And my mom just says even after the birth she felt differently towards her children. After being raised with a mom who was very open and honest about how she birthed us, I saw no other reason to, you know, there was no reason for me to get drugs. If my mom can do it five times, I can do it. Why not? So that's where I took it from. Well, after marrying my husband and getting to know his family, it turns out he comes from a very strong LDS background. All of his cousins and whatnot are LDS. All of his cousins have natural births. In fact, one of his cousins took the certification course with me to become a natural birth instructor. another, they all have home births. It's, I, you know, I was actually the out-of-place one just by having my first in the hospital. And so again, this was what I saw as a cultural norm, even in the LDS society, until I started teaching and started sharing my birth experience. And everyone was looking at me like, you're crazy. What are you talking about? Why would you do that to yourself? And I think one of my students, one of my first students, summed it up the best. She had her first two with an epidural, early induction, because she was tired of being pregnant and all that kind of stuff. But with her third baby, she decided she wanted more control. She wanted to experience the birth of her baby. And she sent me an email afterwards and just brought tears to my eyes at how beautiful of an experience she was able to have with this third baby, because not only did it help her grow as a person, but it helped her to connect as a family with her husband, with her new baby, and also with our Heavenly Father, who really, she felt like was there with her the whole time. And afterwards, she's been so passionate about it ever since. She says, she tells everybody, you know, why would you choose to numb this amazing experience? And in my view, it's, I don't understand when, natural childbirth is the closest thing to creating life. It's the closest thing a woman can attain to being godlike, especially in the way the gospel is set up, with the men being the priesthood holders. This is the closest we can come to being godlike, and to numb that sensation by drugs and other interventions just seems like such a shame to me personally.
Okay, well, so I work in hospitals.
Say your name too.
Rachel Levitt. Which with my very pronatural, low intervention type thing, I'm kind of an oddity there. I kind of have to keep my mouth shut sometimes. Sometimes I have to open it. But a lot of times if I start to spout ideas and philosophies on natural childbirth, many people kind of look at me like I'm strange or weird. In fact, sometimes I kind of just forget to increase the Pitocin. You know, it's kind of like sometimes you have to go behind the back of things, but because I'll tell you, in the hospital, if you want to get an idea of what birthing culture is like in a hospital, almost I would say 98% of the women get Pitocin. Not necessarily induced, per se. They don't start out with Pitocin, but they get it as they are laboring, because either their labor contractions aren't strong enough, or doctors have various reasons for wanting to make births faster. Women do too, so it's not just the doctors. Women, many times, are looking at, we want this baby, we don't really care about this experience. And that's kind of what they're looking at. I think I agree with the C-section rate and the reasons for it. I've heard people discussing this, saying, you know, we know they're going to want to have more children, let's try and not do the C-section. Let's see if we can get them, you know, birth naturally, because we know they're going to want to have more kids. So I definitely think that that is a huge factor. But definitely there is still this sense that the doctor is in charge. The doctor is in control of the birth and the woman isn't. And so they use medications. They use lots of different things. Epidural, you know, it's interesting because we talk about the epidural rate here being one of the highest. I think the national average is somewhere in the 60%. So you look at, we have 90-ish percent, national average is 60%. If you look at, like, the UK, it's 36%. I mean, a lot lower. So that's kind of the differences there. But I have to say that most women, when they come in that I see, I would say maybe about the 60-ish percent, same thing, say they absolutely want epidurals. 40-ish to 50-ish percent say, we kind of want to see what we can do with this. We kind of want to see how it goes, see what, you know, how we like it, what, you know, if we think we can deal with it. I think the problem arises, I see a lot of women who are wanting to maybe do it natural, but not having support there for them. And I think specifically here in Utah, and definitely with the medical system, when I started labor and delivery, I was given absolutely no training on natural childbirth, none. I mean, these women all know, and if you've had natural childbirths, you know how much work it takes to get through a natural childbirth, how much support you need, how much help you need, how much you just need somebody there saying, come on, you can do it. And nothing. They gave me no tools to work with somebody in natural childbirth. So I think part of our issue is also systemic. It is a medical problem issue. Because if I see women who are saying, we want to try it, but then we still have this high epidural rate, there's something going on there that's not working. But just as I talk to other people too, and just in my own experiences in the hospital and with my own birth experiences, I do think that there is sort of this idea among LDS women that, we want the outcome. We don't understand or even care about this experience or what it means in our lives, which seems really odd to me because, quite honestly, as an LDS woman, both my feelings of childbirth and my feelings about my religion have become very intertwined, very intertwined. They have very much dictated how I have believed, my beliefs, and how they have come to me. One of my favorite scriptures that really sets the tone for me when I talk about childbirth is 2 Timothy 1:6-7. It says, "For God hath not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of sound mind." To me, that exemplifies exactly what childbirth should be. Yes, there are scary things that can happen in childbirth. Obviously, bad things happen. But we have so many tools in the LDS religion to deal with that just are put by the wayside. They automatically take that epidural instead of, I'm gonna pray about this. I mean, how many women sit down and actually pray, what should I do? How many women actually think in childbirth, what would really be the best for me? And so that's what kind of gets me about LDS women, is they don't even, we have, you know, what we consider to be blessings from the priesthood. We're encouraged to go out there and strengthen our minds and our bodies and to be healthy and strong. I mean, really, we have that encouragement from so many different aspects in our life. And yet that just isn't happening. Women are very much, they become sort of subservient to sort of the medical profession. What the medical profession says is good and bad, they don't question it. Or if they do, it's very... they don't do it right in their face. Or the doctors yell at them if they do, because quite often you see that also. So they figure, okay, well, I must be wrong. But that's kind of what I kind of have a question about, those things, why LDS women don't use the own resources that we gain from our religion to look for answers around them if they do have questions. But I think many women do also go to friends, and you do get this, oh, it's horrible. I know when I told my cousins I was going to do a natural childbirth, and they're like, that's like getting your arm cut off. I mean, that was their, what they decided a natural childbirth was like. And so a lot of them, when they talk to friends, decide that's not for them. And the other issue I see is that they don't get that support anywhere else. And so I don't, you know, it's hard to put this to other people, LDS people outside of Utah. I mean, this may be a Utah issue and not necessarily an LDS issue. There's not research done really in any of these things, but those are kind of the issues that I have seen in regards to how women don't, or how they just don't decide to make those choices. They just kind of accept what's given them. In fact, I have a friend who was told to have a C-section, or was recommended to have a C-section after her first one, and she really didn't need to, and now she's faced with that same issue. I'm going to have C-sections for all the rest of my children, you know, and that's just, it's really hard to work with. When I am in a birthing room, this is my main thing that I wish all women could understand. I feel like I'm on sacred ground, quite honestly, and I don't think some women get that when we're talking about natural childbirth. They don't get that this is a sacred place. To me, it's much like a temple experience, or, you know, any sort of more spiritually enlightening experience. It's sacred ground. It's a life-giving place. And, you know, it's for the woman, it's for the baby, but I also think it's a family. This is a family being formed. And to me, that is sacred. And that's what I wish more women could get. And you don't get that from the medical professionals. You just don't. To them, they're there to get the baby out safely and mom deliver safely. With as little liability as possible. You know, it is a different philosophy, different way of looking at things. And I think it is kind of a question as to why LDS women don't question things more and don't look to their own spiritual strengths that they have. So.
Oh, yeah.
I've just been taking a few notes thinking about what I thought about as a young dad trying to figure out if I should do this more natural childbirth or not. I just wrote down a few ideas and things that kind of hit me as a... I've always been an active LDS person too, I forgot to say earlier. So a couple of things I remember worrying about. Birth kind of follows the money, I think, in a lot of ways, just like most anything in this world, the economy. I just remember it was really hard for us to find hospitals that would allow us to have a natural childbirth experience, but yet also have the safety. I told Kim I didn't want to have a kid in the home. I thought it was scary and kind of risky. I had all these visions of old pioneer people dying, in their cabins with no help, and you see these dramatic kind of reenactments in film and whatnot. So that was one thing. That was kind of one of my stipulations. And then it took tons of research on Kim's part, because I, of course, didn't want to research anything. So as the dad, I let her research all these different places where we could go. And then her part two was, I remember just being very preoccupied and very distrustful of the insurance companies, wondering if they would cover anything or part of it. It was so complicated to me. It was just overwhelming. So a lot of it, to me, was about the money. And I know here in Utah, with our fourth child, it seems even more difficult to find a good place. I think we've kind of opted to go to a place that at least some of our insurance would cover in case something went wrong, too. You always have that in your mind. What if something goes wrong after the birth and the child needs care? We need to be able to be insured, basically. So those were a lot of things that kind of discouraged me. One thing that kind of flashed in my mind, too, I remember being really, this is just me probably, but I was all worried about Kim being naked in a room with other women for some reason. I don't know if anybody else has ever expressed that. Maybe I'm more in touch with that than other people. It just seemed sort of perverse to me or something. I was a young guy, so who knows what was going on in my mind. But that was one issue. I remember being a little bit preoccupied. If a male doctor came in and did a delivery, I had no problem with that, but I do remember that was sort of a weird issue in the back of my mind. I also wanted to sit back and, like they do in the 1950s movies that I watch, and just sit in the lobby with four other pacing husbands, smoke a cigarette, not literally, but, and just have the baby brought in the swaddled clothes and just be, excited about that, and then go in and see my wife after it was done. That was kind of how I'd always envisioned it to me. So it was pretty shocking to realize how much work and effort, I would put into things, and how I needed to know all about the different interventions and medications. And it was great to sit down with Kim, and finally, part of the Bradley method is you write out your birth plan, where you have maybe 10 or 12 bullets. And I posted them just like some 90 treatise or something on the wall there in the hospital, and made sure that everyone that walked in was aware of it. So in some ways, we talk about how this is an empowering experience for the wives, but I found it to be very empowering for me, and I was able to use my priesthood a lot. I remember I felt imposed upon when a woman suggested that I gave a blessing, which was kind of weird. Rachel said, give her a blessing, Vance. And for some reason, it seemed kind of weird to me, like I should decide as the husband. And I kind of gave her a dirty look, and she backed off. Well, that was the lady that dueled with us. But 5 minutes later, I gave her a blessing. It's just weird what goes through your things that go through your mind in this kind of desperate situation that you're in. It feels quite desperate sometimes.
And the baby turned right after the blessing.
The baby turned right after the blessing, which was a pretty neat spiritual experience for us, too. The baby came in. That was the 38-hour delivery that we were talking about, right? So I remember, for me as a young dad, a lot of it was about the pain. It came down to money, and it came down to pain. I thought, well, why should she suffer? I mean, what's the point? I couldn't see... You can't really even fathom the rewards after the suffering. You can't imagine that her recovery will be so quick. You can't imagine the excitement. I remember her excitement and her crying and her enthusiasm and the thrill of having that baby put, you know, in her arms compared to the one where we had an epidural where she was just kind of like, what's this thing? Like, it was a weird, totally different experience between the first baby and the epidural, and a lot of the drugs that they must have given you for the second baby just made her a little queasy, a little woozy, a little out of it. And I just forgot to say that it is empowering for a dad in another way, too, to be able to do the natural childbirth, is that you, Kim, like I said before, was pretty much delirious the whole time, really out of it. I mean, more than I had ever seen her, which kind of scared me, but luckily because of our classes, I was prepared for that. And I could just, then I became her advocate, and it was a kind of a neat experience for me to stick up for Kim and to, you know, it took courage sometimes to argue with a doctor or someone and to say, you know, what are you doing? Why? Or why? We didn't want to do that. I'm sorry. I've got to say no. I had a number of fights with people, particularly in the second birth, but trying to get them to just leave our kid alone. You know, they're trying to poke it with so many needles, and it's just kind of crazy. A couple other things I thought of. Things that I'd thought about. There's something that, as a young dad, I didn't want to impose on the doctors. A lot of the doctors just want to schedule the delivery, you know, and have it induced or whatever in a certain time frame and have it done. And I thought, I hate to have a doctor, you know, take more than 3 or 4 hours out of his day. You know, I hope that he doesn't mind me imposing on him. So I remember that was an issue too. Is in some ways I thought it would be kind of imposing on a doctor to have him to be there for a long time. I think I've covered most of the other things I was thinking of. Another thing that as a man I remember just thinking that one thing that made me resist natural childbirth was that I thought these guys have been trained just like. It's the same thing for men, I think, as it is for women. Mm-hmm. These guys have been trained. Trust them. I remember thinking doctors are the most respected of professionals, and that I think in the LDS culture, we really esteem professionals. I mean, I'm just an artist. You know, how could I dare assume or presume to question what this doctor says? And the last thing that kind of made me resist natural childbirth was I didn't want to be a hippie. You know, I was born in 1969, and I'd seen Easy Rider, you know, in a communal kind of living, and you know, people just having kids out in the cornfields, you know, all these kinds of things, Indians going out in the corn, American Indians, and having children, and, you know, out in the wilderness. All these things were sort of playing in my brain. I think a lot of them come from the media, because I love watching too many movies. And I just thought... And also, I hate to say it, but one of the bad things about the Bradley Method is they have the most horribly outdated videos you could ever see. They're all a bunch of long-haired, kind of bad videos from the 1970s, and the whole time I kept thinking, oh, man, this, I'm going to be like a weird hippie guy having a kid in a hot tub in someone's yard, you know? So those are the things that made me resist it.
Okay, I'm going to go briefly just through some of my own thoughts. This is Kimberly Mellon speaking, and then hopefully we'll have at least 15 to 20 minutes to open it up to your discussion, your questions as an audience. One of the questions that I asked all the panelists is, I think there's a difference between the doctrine of the LDS Church that supports or is against natural childbirth and the cultural components. And I think, in my mind, the only... thought before was, is this a Utah theology or school of thought, or is it an LDS theology? I think it's Utah only in the sense that the LDS doctrines are compounded and correlated and mistaken for cultural, or rather cultural beliefs are mistaken for doctrine.
I'd like to just add to that. I had my first son in Georgia, and there was actually 6 of us pregnant at the same time in our ward, and 2 of us had chosen to go naturally, and it was both of our first times, and everybody else already had a baby, and so they were all looking at us like, yeah, right, good luck with that. Well, there was one other mom who was the first time, but she had no desire for a natural childbirth, and I think part of it was very much fed by these other women
And we have the Relief Society. We have a closed women's organization. And when the majority of those women across the country, around the world, are having medicalized births, that's what you hear about. You go to church and you're pregnant. Oh, how exciting. When's the baby due? What are you having? Who's your doctor? What hospital are you having? Don't forget to get the drugs when you walk in the door. You won't survive without it. You know, it's just part of that conversation. And I think it really is just LDS women in general being subject to the societal norms, where you look at the high epidural rates across the country, not just within the LDS culture.
The last time I was at Sunstone, I did a one-person play on the life of Emma Smith and polygamy. And as I was researching her life, she was a very accomplished midwife herself. And that's one of the ways I was first exposed to the difference between the Relief Society and the church's official involvement in sanctioning of midwifery practice in the early pioneer days versus now. That was a rude awakening for me, as Becky talked about. As Becky mentioned, in the early days of the church, midwives and doctors were considered a church calling and set apart by priesthood authority. Sometimes that was the only qualification before setting up practice. And one of my favorite things is that the women were set apart as healers, and there was a specific a blessing and anointing and sealing of the woman's body by their Relief Society sisters in preparation for childbirth. And when I came across that blessing... I won't read it all right now. I actually don't have time to read it all, but I'll direct you towards it.
Just read one section of it. It's one of my favorites.
Okay.
I love it.
Well, I try to keep this blessing in mind, even with all the clients that I help that aren't LDS, because I wish that something like this was still in place. I wish that it was something official or unofficial within the Relief Society, that we could provide the spiritual, physiological, social, intellectual, emotional preparation for other mothers as they undergo this rite of passage into what you guys describe as what is going to prepare us to be gods in LDS theology, to truly embrace motherhood. But this is taken from the 1901-1909 minutes of the Oakley, Idaho Second Ward Relief Society. And actually, these blessings, they could have given them impromptu, but some women like to follow a prescribed blessing. And so this is some of it. We anoint your back, your spinal column, that you might be strong and healthy. No disease fasten upon it. No accident befall you. Your kidneys, your bladder, I'll just go through some of these things. Hips, liver, lungs, spleen, your breast, that your milk may come freely, that you need not be afflicted with sore nipples, as many are. Your heart, that it might be comforted. Like, how often do we have these just specific discussions with our Relief Society sisters about breastfeeding? And that's what we need support and help in, right? You know, are they cracked? Oh, try some Lansinol. Let me see if you're latched on correctly. But would we ever, is that ever a topic of Relief Society discussion? No. Request blessings from the Lord on the unborn child, that it might be perfect in every joint and limb and muscle, that it might be beautiful to look upon and happy, that when its full time shall have come, that the child will present ripe for birth, that the afterbirth shall come at its proper time, that you will not flow to excess. We anoint your thighs, that they might be healthy and strong, that you might be exempt from cramps and the bursting of veins, that you might be able to stand and walk upon the earth and go in and out of the temples of God. Talks about the balm of sisterhood, and then they seal the blessing, saying... we unitedly lay our hands upon you to seal this washing and anointing wherewith you have been washed and anointed for your safe delivery, for the salvation of you and your child and future children. And we ask God to let his special blessings rest upon you, that you might sleep well at night, that your dreams might be pleasant, that the good spirit might guard and protect you from every evil influence, spirit, and power, that you may go your full time, that every blessing we have asked God to confer upon you and your offspring may be literally fulfilled, that all fear and dread might be taken from you, that you might learn to trust in God and sympathize with your Savior, Jesus Christ. All these blessings we unitedly seal upon you in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. I just love that blessing. You had a question?
What's the book?
This is it's called Sisters in Spirit, but the actual article is by Linda King Newell, and she's written about it in several other articles and quoted it in full. And there's actually... two or three other extant blessings that are very similar to that, too, that you can find. I just found it on the internet, Googling.
Okay.
So, but anyway, I grieve the loss of the opportunity to support my Relief Society sisters this way. As I've had clients that, most of my clients in Illinois were Jewish or born-again Christian or evangelical Christian, but I feel closer to them as women and as a couple than I do to my natural sisters or my best friends, and I probably only shared between 3 and 12 hours with these people actually in the birthing room and then through a series of classes. But it's because even more than sharing the gospel, I was able to help them do the only thing that is of eternal significance, which is create a family that will continue on forever. I witnessed the birth of a couple, the birth of a family, the entering of a new spirit into this planet. And the spiritual discussions I've had with these women in labor, I wish I could have with my LDS sisters. The Jewish clients that I've had were very cognizant of their ancestors, of their grandmothers and great aunts and people like that who had gone before. And they have a whole protocol as far as deciding on the name and who announces the name and presenting the baby to their parents and things like that. But they talked a lot about that, about the veil being very thin and changing the name mid-delivery based on who they thought was spiritually in the room supporting them. And then my born-again clients, I asked all the mothers to help me think of things that will calm them down or, you know, center their thoughts or help them remember what the goal of their labor is. And often they write out prayers or scriptures that are important to them. And one of my clients in particular, she just, she really wanted to use it as an opportunity to understand what the Savior went through and what Gethsemane really was. And she says she doesn't remember anything else. I mean, some specific massage techniques that she said were a godsend, but the thing that she said she remembers most is that this was her personal Gethsemane and that she felt closer to the Savior and understanding the purpose of pain and suffering for another human being, knowing that the ultimate reward is... And I mean, those are great spiritual discussions. I wish I could discuss things from the pulpit in as much specificity without offending people in the LDS setting as I did with them. Let me look at time because I don't want to go over. Okay, let me take 5 minutes. Here's some specific doctrines in the LDS Church that either support or contradict my personal birthing philosophy. First, the concept of the body as a temple, that it's not to be defiled. The early pioneers had complete avoidance of the medical community and stressed holistic and herbal remedies. They encouraged all the early saints to only go to LDS set-apart doctors and midwives. And if you compare that now with our reliance on the technological... Sorry, I'm pregnant too, so I'm working on half the brain. Yeah, that's very different. The word of wisdom, stressing the discipline of your physical body, emphasizing moderation in all things and the interplay between the body and the spirit. To me, it's ironic that with all the church's stress on the avoidance of chemicals, women unquestioningly allow childbirth drugs to permeate their bodies and the bodies of their babies without even researching the risks and possible side effects. We're one of the only Christian denominations that defines the soul as consisting of the physical body and the mind and the spirit. So it's ironic to me that there's not a holistic approach to all different facets of life, not just childbirth, but as far as healthy eating and yoga and, I don't know, Tai Chi and meditation. But we recognize as LDS members that there are no temporal laws without spiritual ramifications. So why should that be contradictory in childbirth? We know that the mind and body have to progress together. But yet in childbirth, what the medications actually do is separate your mind and body into separate components. The concept of opposition in all things. I think my life was totally defined as before natural childbirth and after natural childbirth. Mm-hmm. And my concepts of words such as pain, what pain actually was, what fear was, the purpose of fear, the purpose of pain, endurance, strength, joy, the amazing recovering abilities of the physical body and the spiritual and the emotional bodies, all those things changed for me when I had a child naturally. I mentioned this before, but the Savior's direct experience with pain in order to succor us. I have never felt closer to understanding the concept of working through physical pain for the benefit of another until childbirth. It gives me such an appreciation for Christ's strength and his individual love for us. So those are some doctrinal things. Now, culturally, we've touched upon this, the emphasized respect for authority, especially the priesthood males. I agree that it carries over and into an unquestioning obedience of the medical advice given by OBs and the hospital system. Another issue is the reluctance to admit weakness. This is sort of a Utah community thing, I think. Keeping up with the Joneses, maintaining a perfect public front. We're the highest, Utah has the highest bankruptcy rate as well. I mean, it carries over into our desire. Everything has to be good, not just good, but better than you guys, you know? And I think that sort of has to do, carries over into birth plan. Are LDS women reluctant to let anyone else, maybe even especially other women, witness them in the pain, the neediness, and the emotional extremes of childbirth versus the well-coiffed, high-heeled, perfectly put-together Sunday homes? How many times have you gone visiting, teaching, and people say, oh, you can't come because my house isn't clean? Like that matters, you know, that sort of in the childbirth situation, you don't want another woman to see you pooping or, do you know what I mean? See you screaming like a banshee and moaning and going ape-like or whatever, which is all part of childbirth.
Or in the case of my wife, just cussing all out.
Yeah. But it's a different, I mean, it's not the put-together Relief Society president. It's not the public facade that we like to maintain. Avoidance of any discussion of anything to do with sensuality and sexuality. Is childbirth an extreme example of the primal natural man that most women would rather keep repressed? I know I felt very differently about the beauty and the strength of my own body after natural childbirth. A whole different, it carried over into my attitudes about sex and sexuality and what my body was for, and weight issues, eating issues, everything, my whole concept physically changed after natural childbirth. It gave me sensual pride, control, and ownership over my body. And then the emphasis on the family. One thing, when I asked my midwife group, midwifery group here in Utah, why they thought the C-section rate was as high as it is, two or three of the non-LDS midwives said that they thought it was, ironically, because of the emphasis on the family, that the OBs and the people who work in, within the medical system are more protective of their own family environment, and they're like, work is work, home is home, I need to be home. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was a really strange contradiction that the doctors are saying, okay, come on, speed up the Pitocin drip so we can get this, you know, centimeter an hour thing going, because I promised my wife I'd be home to do the family home evening lesson.
My C-section was at 5:30 p.m.
Yeah, and they mentioned that. They
he
said
mentioned
most...
during the C-section what his wife was probably making for dinner.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So that's
how
interesting.
How quickly he would get home to eat. And I had requested time for labor because I knew I was going to have a C-section, but I also knew laboring was better for the babies. But they said no.
Doctor needs to get home for dinner.
Coming in.
Or dance recital or whatever it is, which you wouldn't find in many other, maybe, doctors.
And that's not just a Utah thing. That's, I mean, there are studies that show, I mean, C-sections at 5 o'clock and 5 p.m. and 10 p.m. Monday through Friday. So, yeah, less babies being born on weekends.
Yeah, nobody wants to be there over the weekend. They've got boat trips planned and things. I guess I'll stop it there. So, because I want to give you guys, it's 12:30, so we have 15 minutes officially. Do we have any questions from the audience, or I'll open it up there first? Yes, sir. And if you could, since we're recording this for future downloads, so we can spread the ripple of this discussion. Yeah, step up to the microphone. It is. I can hear you great.
I had 7 children born in the LDS hospital, and I was not allowed to see any of the births at all. And even after I asked, they wouldn't let me do it. I guess you let have husbands see the birth of the child, which is a good spiritual experience. And then I became a farmer, and I raised a lot of cows and calves, and I noticed the cow would eat the afterbirth so that it wouldn't bleed. Is anything like that go on in
John? Not officially through any of the Bradley methods, but there's, as my husband would say, hippie things like placenta cake, placenta spaghetti sauce.
Central helper, I think, was the sign.
But there are people that do that. I mean, there are people that do, that have done that. I personally have not.
At the hospital, absolutely not.
But you're right, it is full of nutrients that most, we're one of the only mammals that do not do that.
There's a trend right now to dry and encapsulate the placenta in little vitamin pills.
You can do that here in Utah. There's two or three companies even. And in China, that's in Japan.
Yeah, you can find individuals that know how to dry and encapsulate a placenta.
Wow. So. And one of my wife's birth, she was bleeding after the afterbirth came, and I had to take her back to the hospital to cauterize the veins and it wouldn't bleed. And all my calves were born healthy except one. It stuck its leg out and a poor cow couldn't deliver. If I knew a little bit more, I would have pushed it in and turned the calf so it would have been born alive. But a lot of times they come out in the sack, and the mother opens the sack and licks the child, calf, until it bleeds, breathes, which is a beautiful thing. And I know a man that married my son-in-law's only sister. He lived down in Lehigh. And he delivered himself 9 children from that woman. Yeah. Do you have any men, husbands that deliver babies?
I think my husband has pretty much caught most of our children.
You know, there is a different birthing cultures depending on where you give birth. The hospitals, men don't, and they wouldn't be allowed to. You may find an occasional provider that possibly would, but quite honestly, they're very worried about litigation. And if something were to happen and they were not there, the doctor was not in charge of it, and somebody might sue them, that's a whole other issue. So that's really the concern there. Men do cut the cord. They do actually quite often try to involve the men in birth if they want to be as much as possible. And that is something that has definitely improved over the years.
And that's since the 50s, really.
Uh-huh. It is definitely that aspect
Grant
of
Reed and Dr. Bradley changed.
Yeah, and I think it is because of this Bradley method that people become more aware of including the husbands in childbirth.
So. I was going to say, yeah, that's one of the great things about husband-coached childbirth is that we encourage the husband's involvement. I have only had one of my students so far where the dad actually caught the baby and was at the birth center with you guys, actually. And he raves about it. I mean, to him, it was beautiful. I asked my husband if he wants to catch the baby. He said, no. I'm going to stay with you. That's where I belong. So I think it's a personal choice. But, yeah, I'm an absolute advocate of the husband delivering the child with the assistance of a medical professional to make sure it's safe.
Just hearing the emotion in your voice, where you were not able to be present at the births of your children. My grandmother gave birth in the 40s and 50s and was unconscious for all 4 of her births. And her husband was not with her. And I feel like that system deprived her of her birth experience, and her husband too. And so things have changed, and fathers are in the delivery rooms and the birth rooms. And the birth center that I work for encourages fathers to catch their own children if that is something they want to do. And that just makes me sad that you were deprived of that right. So.
Anyone else? Please, step up.
Oh, sure. Okay. I'm curious if you guys have anything to say about pros and cons of natural childbirth at home versus at a birthing center, whether you, I don't know if you do home births as well, or just if any of you have had both, there's a difference between the two.
Can I?
Yes.
Statistics too. Well, I've done home births and birth center births. I tell people generally, anytime they're choosing a birth, that their practitioner is much more important than the place of their birth. Because their practitioner's knowledge is what matters, and their practitioner's respect of the process is what matters. Home birth and birth center have essentially the same equipment and the same medication available. There are a few more things that are available in a building like a birth center sometimes that are available, but very little. The majority of those things are going to be the same at a home birth and a birthing center. They're both essentially low-risk facilities where you can give birth. The difference is more emotional when you are in your home, you are in your own space, and you, assuming that you're in your own space giving birth in your home and not someone else's, you're also in your own bacteria, which means you're much less likely to have any kind of infectious process as well. That's one of our biggest concerns at the birth center, that our facility is very, very, very clean because you're exposed to other people's germs. But it is about your personal provider that's taking care of you and your personal feelings about where you're comfortable. As far as safety, there's not a difference. Statistics, and I can't give you statistics other than our own personal birth center statistics. Statistics are very, very good for home births and birth center births, that they're actually both better for equal clientele in the hospital as far as safety for mother and baby, but they both are pretty equal. That answer your question?
We had one of our kids, a couple of our kids in Illinois, an alternative birthing center in the hospital, and I was kind of amazed. You went in, and there's this big queen-size bed, and some things to sit on, some balls that you could rock on. There was a big tub and a shower, and subdued lighting, and there was a CD player. I made a little tape of our best of songs to listen to. Bunch of water out there for both of us to drink, and then whenever there was an emergency, all of a sudden, boom, all the lights come on, all the doors open up, and all the equipment you need for, you know, if you're having an emergency is right there. I always was really impressed with that, so it's kind of nice. So you get the best of all worlds in some ways.
I would like to make a comment here if I could, and I don't want to... I hope Vance isn't mad at me about this.
That's okay.
But I consider there to be a huge discrepancy between a freestanding birth center and a birth center attached to a hospital. There is a national licensing certification board for birthing centers. If a birthing center is attached or affiliated with a hospital, they cannot even apply to certify. A birthing center, in order to certify as a birthing center with the national organization, must be freestanding and unaffiliated, because a birthing center is essentially low risk. If you've got all the equipment there, you are not a low risk facility. We take only low risk clientele, and we found that most of the hospitals in the area will call their women's center their birth center. But you will find that if you go in there, most women go in there and say, oh, it's so pretty, you know, pretty bedspreads. And then when they walk in labor, it is not the same experience. All the equipment has been rolled in because, as we talked before, our society believes that childbirth is an emergency. Therefore, everything comes in and all of those plans may go out the window. Although there are some hospitals that are very appropriate and do a good job, it is much more rare. And there is a big difference between a free standing birth center and one attached to the hospital.
And on that note, I actually have the one cousin who's out there in our family. She's had scheduled C-sections with both of her children, and she gets deeply offended when she hears of us natural childbirth proponents, because she feels like we're stomping on her rights to choose a C-section. And she also says that she feels it's more important what you do with the children after they're born than how they get here. And I think that's a very sad thought process, because how they get here is a catalyst to how you're going to raise your children and how you bond with them.
Time-wise, we have 5 minutes left.
Well, I have my own home birth story, but I just want to thank everybody on this panel for all your thoughts and giving, helping me with my own voice to share my experience and own it without having to almost apologize for it sometimes because of the reaction I get. And it's really good to hear Vance's thoughts as the husband and the man in the situation. I didn't even know about the Bradley method. I didn't use the Bradley method, but just the whole home birth experience with the midwife helped me realize that pregnancy is not an illness. It's a beautiful, natural part of a woman's body. A woman's body is made to birth the children that she creates, and that to have trust in that and not fear, and this empowers women and gives them the knowledge and the strength they need. So I'm a big advocate for it, but sometimes I don't know what to do with my energy. Just thank you for being an example to me. And that's all.
Thanks. Thank you.
All right, I have five. Had some. Multiple ways. Let's just leave it that. Okay. Have three girls now. How would I help them in this culture understand what choices they have besides just education? Because when they go to Young Women's or they go to, that's not an option. That's not, I had a daughter shut down because of what her mother did on my last child, and she was told she was wrong. I was wrong, she was wrong. Took this little girl into the bishop's office. Anyway,
wow.
How do I help my daughters? Okay, how do I help my daughters get to this point? If you have any suggestions.
I think biggest for me was that my mom's example was more important than what other people were telling me. So being raised with my mom saying, you know, there is no other way. This is the best way to have your baby. It's natural, and this is what God planned for me to do. This is how He prepared my body to do it, and there was nothing better than having my husband there. So I would say encouraging the relationship with their husbands down the road, encouraging their power as a woman, as a young woman who's a child of God, who God has created to bear children and not suffer, would be a huge emphasis you could make.
There's so much stuff on the internet now too. Mm-hmm. Have any of you seen the campaign for Virginia Birth or something like that? Virginia as a state had a contest of personal birth stories supporting natural childbirth, and there's like 45 homemade videos that are all just amazing. I also think discussion of the body and appropriate anatomy and physical parts from a young age is really important, so that our children aren't brought up thinking that, again, any part of the body or sexuality, including birth, is something to be ashamed of or denied or managed by a doctor. But I think, you know, like in the Preach My Gospel or when you're a missionary, they always say no conversion happens when there's a great amount of hostility or anger or defensiveness, because then you're just fighting, you're not listening. And nowhere have I found that more an appropriate guideline than discussing natural childbirth. And I think we have to just, like, as LDS members, maybe you consider the audience and you use their vocabulary and you make sure that you honor the strong feelings that they have for whatever birth experiences that they've had with respect and acknowledging how strongly they feel, and then sort of introduce your own little by little without making it feel like it's a right or wrong. And then once they're sort of on your side and that you've handed a couple of videos to them and they've read a couple of the books, I found that then they come searching and asking more questions. Again, similar to sometimes a gospel conversion story, but I don't think much is accomplished by fighting. And then I think it's also just discussing things, not being afraid. Like you said, it sounds like you personally feel shut down. You had huge ramifications within your religious community for the choices you made for your birth, but don't let that fear factor stop you. Continue to voice your voice and encourage your children to do that, because it only happens one person, one birth at a time, and then the ripple effect can continue down through generations.
Just a quick note, too. I believe that the biggest factor in why women choose what they choose during childbirth is because of fear. Pure and simple, they are afraid. I mean, who wouldn't be afraid of something they don't know, don't understand, can't control? It's something that's scary. And when we are in a culture that kind of accentuates that fear and says, yeah, that is scary, that is fearful, it's, you know, we need to do something about this fear, and the way we do it is by medication. That's kind of the message that they get, that to solve their fear problem is through medication and through having somebody else control themselves. So, like, for me, because I've worried about that with my daughter, too, who actually has lots of fears. She's afraid of things she cannot control in various aspects of her life. And so I really think it is important to talk to anybody, or children, family, anybody, not necessarily about how we give birth or why, or, you know, the good or bad things about it, but really, how do we control our fear? I mean, in the LDS culture, we really, at least I've been taught, that fear is not from a good source. You know, fear is something that doesn't help us, it harms us. And that we need to find ways to deal with that fear. And I think, again, in our doctrine and our culture, we have ways to deal with that that does not include medication. We have prayer. We have other people to help and support us. We have ways to deal with fear that doesn't include medication. And quite honestly, I think it's a much better way of dealing with fear.
Just knowledge mm-hmm. of what to do before, even in labor, to help it be in the right position, things like that.
Right. And I think exposing them to good labor stories, good birth stories, is a big, huge thing.
Those are hard to come by.
They are.
I would like to make another comment. I think that as parents, we want our children to be like us. We want our children to choose the things we choose. And because we've spent a lot of time making those choices, I think much more important is to honor your daughter's right to choose. And if they choose that they want to have an elective cesarean, honor that right and support them in that. You hope that they do it with education and make a definite decision. You hope that, but you honor that right. Because that, in honoring their right to make those decisions, in saying, yes, you can choose what's best for you, they go, huh, what really is best for me? Because what's best for them may not be what's best for you. It may be, but you're giving them empowerment in their own souls, that they can pray to their Heavenly Father and get that direction. That other people don't dictate what they choose in their lives. You empower them to make those decisions. And I think that's much more important than giving them the specific instruction or information or saying this is the best way. Because they will figure it out and will research it on their own if they're empowered enough to make those decisions.
So we're 5 minutes over, so we have to call this panel to an official close. But I want to thank each of these panelists for their personal passion and dedication and the time that you've taken out of your busy schedules as professionals and mothers to share your stories and share your voice. I really appreciate it. And also to you, our audience members, thank you for your support and recognition.